The first level of burnout is an emotional exhaustion.
Burnout is rampant in the modern workplace.
Burnout is characterized by near constant exhaustion, a lack of motivation in everything.
Burnout just keeps on going and going and going.
The Wise Guides is a conversation show hosted by me, Amber Petty, that aims to extract some beautiful pearls of wisdom from our fabulous female guests who, like all of us, have learnt something about life worth sharing with the world. Once upon a time, I used to think burnouts were what idiots did on quiet suburban streets at night in their hotted up cars. Or that thing they did one time when I went to a car show and hundreds of people sat around looking at two dudes spinning their cars around until their tyres blew out. Rubber flying through the air. And whilst I saw firsthand that day that some people get a lot of pleasure out of destroying their wheels, leaving black marks all over the road, there's also those like me that have a tendency to do pretty much the same to their bodies, their minds, and when things get really, really bad, even their souls. There was a time, not long enough ago for me to forget, that I used to do a burnout on myself most weekends. In fact, I did it for years and years, with my fairly unclever trick of binge drinking and smoking myself into a cinder. There was also a patch of time, I'm not going to lie, but I would do the same using drugs, all of which would leave me physically and mentally shattered for days. And then after 6 days or so of berating myself heavily, I'd do it all over again. It didn't help that back in the mid-90s that I got myself a job working in the music industry. I was the promotions and publicity manager for a couple of record companies, which meant my job was to be promoting their music and driving the bands to interviews and rehearsals by day. Then at night I was at gigs, entertaining artists at seedy nightclubs, buying them drinks, and only really leaving when I thought I could escape without getting in trouble by my boss. And although I might have finally been paid for living this unhealthy, burn-the-candle-at-both-ends lifestyle, I was living in Groundhog Day, in a world where I was perpetually burnt out.
Hi, my name is Kat John, and I'm a meditation facilitator, registered nurse and psychology graduate.
So, Kat, does my very recent lifestyle make any sense to you?
It makes total sense to me, and it's completely relatable.
Yeah. I think it's a really good one to put out there and discuss, because I think the world is getting more healthy in its outlook, for sure. Mm. But I think it's a long way off kind of completely cleansing itself. And of course, it's never going to be like that. But there is, and I certainly think in Australia too, we have a really, really bad culture. And I know that this is going to offend a lot of people. We have a bad culture of real drinking. Smoking has gone down a little bit, but also drugs. Mm. So I think this conversation has to continue. And I know for myself, like literally decades and decades of my life were spent how I just described.
So what you say is very much how I've lived probably the last two decades of my life. Mm. I would burn myself out very similar to how you were, drinking, smoking, drugs in my late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
I'd burn myself out through being a nurse, through overgiving.
Yeah.
I'd burn myself out through overgiving to my clients. I found many ways to burn out.
Do you think that with the just staying on the alcohol and the drugs, for me it was binge drinking. I know a lot of people can get into, you know, where they're having a few drinks or they're smoking a packet of cigarettes a day. I was never the drinking every day, certainly not doing drugs every day. But I was always binge everything, binge alcohol, binge cigarettes, binge drugs, because literally I don't think my body could sustain more than that. And also mentally I couldn't cope with more than that, because it is literally like, while you've got all of that going on, you're smoking, you're drinking, you're doing the drugs and whatever, of course you feel kind of fantastic, you're fired up, you convince yourself you are releasing. Mm. It feels in so many ways like you're actually honouring yourself.
Mm.
And that's the sort of scary thing.
Yes. And I think it's a sense of release. Mm. It's a sense of escapism.
Yeah.
And it's also a sense of connection. Mm. I think that when you go to that extreme of binge, because binge is extreme.
That's right.
There's so many different elements inside of it. But one of them, I think that it is connection, which is a dangerous one.
Yeah.
And certainly one where I got sucked into the binge of drugs and alcohol and cigarettes because it was a form of connection, but obviously it was unhealthy.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that philosophy, because another type of person with an addiction just popped into my head. Mm. And it's like the guy sitting down there at the pub, and he goes there every night, and they're usually the sweetest, kindest, most sensitive little blokes at the bar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they look weathered and, you know, purple and red in the face because they've been pounding themselves with these slow beers, but too many beers every single day for a long time. And I think when you said connection, that popped into my head because there's a lot of lonely people in the world.
Yes.
And that connection to a place that you make the regular place, because those guys are not changing it up. They're going to the same bar. They're probably sitting on exactly the same stool. Mm. They see the same regular faces behind the bar who make them feel like they know them because they start to, like it is genuine. And, you know, they might have the same guy, you know, Bernie, that's sitting two stools up, and they may have never, they may never connect outside of the doors of those pubs. Connection.
Oh, it just makes so much sense what you're saying. And I think what I was searching for, I was searching for connection everywhere outside of myself. Mm. And in the beginning of that process, it was completely unhealthy. Mm. You know, it would be in nightclubs. It would be bender after bender after bender. Mm. Making, I guess, transitional friendships that really weren't solid, all because...
What do you think you wanted out of those transitional relationships? Because I reckon it probably varies from person to person.
Me personally, it was exciting always meeting new people.
Yep.
And it was always kept at a high because I was high. Mm. Meeting all these new people were kept at a high. So I guess in that sense, I never really, which is weird, never had to get super close to anyone. Mm-hmm. The connection actually wasn't real.
Yes.
It was always kind of going from one to the other to the other.
Yep.
Feeling like it was a connection, but it wasn't that deep connection I was really gagging for.
Yeah.
So it actually fed that whole notion you were talking about of loneliness, because I was just down and out lonely inside myself.
And that's definitely, and I kind of wonder, you know, if you're standing at a packed nightclub and everyone's going berserk, it would be so interesting to have some sort of, if you could just press a button on everyone and have some print off of individually what they are getting out of being in that high state, what their backstory is, because there would be so many similarities, but there would be a unique kind of party blueprint to each person. Because for me, as you said, loneliness was 100%. I think it evolved because, you know, I think really I started binge drinking in my... I started drinking probably when I was like 12 or 13, which just makes me so much like Drew Barrymore. No, so I'm just going to give myself a celebrity alignment there, which is a terrible thing to joke about because that was not good. So exploring, you know, dabbling with that as you kind of do as the sort of naughty group at school. Then as I got into my late teens, it definitely got worse, and then there was a patch of maybe 2 years where the drugs came in and there wasn't a lot of people that I knew doing drugs.
Right.
So how clever that I could get out there and be one and find those people. If you work hard enough, you'll find them at the worst, dodgiest...
Law of attraction.
That's exactly it. I manifested all of these similar types, all these lost, lonely souls. Mm. But then I ended up in a relationship for 6 years of my 20s. So the drugs certainly went away.
Yep.
I went over to England and I'm living in a village, so the dynamics of party were different. But what they certainly was, as you said, law of attraction, is I then fell into my boyfriend's group of friends.
Yep.
They were all great people. It was, we were doing very different things on the weekend. We're going to little village cute pubs. You know, I'm sort of surrounded by all this cool history. But certainly my boyfriend, and he was a beautiful, beautiful man. He still is. He would drink to a stupor level. So we would completely lose connection.
Wow.
And the thing with that, whilst I would sort of sit back and go, why are you doing this to us and ruining our connection?
Yep.
Every part of before and during that relationship, and certainly after, in terms of my drinking and being out or smoking, was all about, exactly as he said, pretending it's loosening me up, but it's actually winding me up more, and it's actually disconnecting me from people. Yep. And I think love and relationships has always been a big factor in my wanting to escape and release, and convincing myself that I'm going to meet all these different people and I'm going to be a lot more relaxed and I can be myself, and the fear of intimacy emotionally,
yep,
and physically, but yep, emotionally I think it comes first for me. Then the physical is, it becomes, the emotional kind of already puts me in a sort of nervous state. You know, I start to curdle at the end of those nights.
Yep.
You know, I might have started like, oh, you know, queen of the world, I'm so funny, I'm, you know, I'm the life of the party, like everyone wants to know me. By the end, if it's a big, long binge drink, I'm like dark and sharp and my sense of humour is like cutting like a knife, and whoever I've sort of been half keen on, I just turn into something that they don't, the connection darkens greatly. Were you like that? Like, how do you, what's your spectrum?
Wow.
Of party. Just to take it, really. Because you're such a joyous kind of person, and I've seen you walk into a room and you light up with your energy. So I'm quite interested to know, and not everyone gets dark like I do, and it's not every time, but it's certainly in those intensely hardcore binge weekend chapters of my life, because I think that's also what an alcoholic does. You know, I think when that back end of, because it's not, nothing's fresh anymore.
No.
You're dark and stale.
You've worn yourself out.
You've worn yourself out. That's
which
right.
Which is burnout.
Totally.
Yep.
So, that's right. So you're burnt out. So you've actually really sort of low vibrating version of yourself.
Yes.
But what is that spectrum for you?
For me, I guess, you know, I would go out and I'd be really, for maybe 2-3 years, I was partying from Thursday through to Sunday night, which was pretty heavy duty.
Yeah.
You know, but
you've got a lot more energy,
which is bizarre because I'm short and little, and I mean,
so how big are those nights when you're doing, because a lot of people will relate to this too, you know, a lot of people in their 20s or their teens, you know, Thursday, Friday, you know, it's the sort of
absolutely
the hat trick of benders.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
Thursday,
a bender.
Thursday would start just sort of drinking, going out maybe till 2 o'clock in the morning. Friday night would be a breather, and then Saturday night we used to gear up to go to the Prince Hotel, and that was like bring the plethora of whatever drug is possible.
Yeah.
And then that would continue to maybe 6 o'clock the next morning. Then we'd head to a couple of places along Chapel Street. And then that
Revolver,
would,
I think you're saying. I think you're saying one. I think you mean 161.
Yes, damn it.
Oh, God, we've just missed each other a couple of times. Shit.
So, yeah. And really, I guess, where I would start to decline was Sunday afternoon, and when I was about to head home, where the real connection was, my family. I was still living at home. So I guess I was on this big party, high, fun, you know, all my friends are here, not a care in the world. But then I just knew when I was going home, it was like, whoa, oh my gosh, all
anxiety?
The
anxiety.
Oh, anxiety,
out of this world.
Panic.
Yeah.
I didn't want my family to look me in the eye. I couldn't look at them in the eye.
No, you really couldn't.
No, because like, I knew that they knew.
Shit, that's hard.
It was really hard. And then I was studying at the same time, I was studying nursing. So then I guess where I started to lose that high and then head down into the dark spiral was firstly when I'd see my family, and then secondly when I'd turn up to uni the next day and I'd feel guilty. I was learning how to save people's lives, and yet here I am on the weekend completely throttling my own and burning myself out. So basically that was when the dark thoughts started to come in. That's when I wasn't really safe within my own company.
Yeah. And what do you mean by that?
The amount of pressure, or the amount of the negative thoughts that would come into my head. Maybe not pressure, but the critical voice of, you're a waste of space. You are unworthy of being here at uni. You are ungrateful. You know, who do you think you are going out on the weekends? There are people who would absolutely love your life, and what are you doing with it? You know?
Yeah.
That kind of voice.
That's interesting, really, because, and what I was going to say was, my, that sort of darkness would only really happen when I was, as you said, burnt out, and it was just alcohol and cigarettes.
Yep.
The drugs, as you said, if I had done the same, the 6 a.m. and then we're on to somewhere else that we don't need to go, the leaving and the daylight would give me,
whoa,
oh my God, the anxiety, it actually gives me anxiety. Same. Now, even thinking about it, because you can just relive it so clearly.
Yep.
And that is the panic, that it's like, this is wrong. This is not what you should be doing. It's the hardcore guilt. Because I actually think that it's the last thing my spirit wants to do.
No.
My spirit wants to be up at 6 a.m.
Yes.
Not friggin' wheeling myself through the door with mascara down to my knees, dropping my keys and my shoes just inside the door, curling up to a hamburger or, you know, I mean...
And that's where that darkness of this, that what you're talking about before, your soul gets dark. You know, burnout doesn't affect your mind and your body.
Because you're marching against it.
Yep.
You're marching against it. But what I was going to say is I think it's really interesting that you talk about being the nurse. You know, you are the saver of lives. You are the facilitator of, you know, nourishing lives.
Yeah.
And yet I always hear about these incredible trainee, actual nurses, men, women that party hard.
Yep.
And I wonder, speaking of being on the spectrum, if there is something that we all have to learn about, because you are so, let's say, to the left in terms of knowing, being educated and genuinely caring about saving lives and improving health, that it's almost unbalanced. Yep. So it's like you throw yourself on the weekends at the other end of the spectrum to almost balance it out.
Yep.
But the scales can tip over to the dark side when you're partying that much. But do you think that resonates for nurses? Because there is a lot of partying.
Totally.
For them.
And I think because you're constantly giving. Mm-hmm. You're giving out. And so for me personally, the only way I knew to give back to myself was to go and party. Mm-hmm. That to me, as you were saying before, it was like a gift back to myself. It was a treat. Mm-hmm. You know, you deserve it. Mm-hmm. You've been working 7 night shifts in a row. You've, you know, seen death this week. You've saved a life this week. You've whatever else done. Mm-hmm. So go and treat yourself and hang out with your mates who want to go and party. It completely makes sense.
I think we've all got to be careful about what we symbolically and subconsciously consider an off button.
Yep.
I recently saw a post Kat wrote on Instagram and I found it quite intriguing. She wrote, "Burnout was my go-to place. It gave me permission to rest, to cancel plans, to gain love, care and shut off from people. I'd give and give and give, even though my inner being was screaming for downtime. I'd say yes, even when my sense of self wanted to say no. I'd push myself to pain, even though my soul said, you're about to get smacked down by the universe if you don't stop. This way of life nearly killed me twice. I had to find another way to live." There was more to this Instagram post, but I want to talk to Kat about it now. Kat, I saw this post you posted on Instagram a couple of weeks ago, and it was titled Burnout.
Mm.
And I thought it was really fascinating, especially because I've known you only maybe a year or two, maybe 2 years. And since then, your work as a healer, I mean, you were still working as a nurse and you were moving into, should I become a healer and go out on my own? And you really have, and I think everyone should follow you on Instagram, just Kat John. You know, you've just always been such an incredibly interesting and in tune person. And I find your posts really, really interesting. And I guess why this one I found really interesting was I think people can get really caught up, especially in your line of work, under the old wellness banner. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I know I'm a bitch, but that just kills me a little.
Do it.
It kills me.
Do it.
Wellness. I mean, why don't you just group up a million people and just have this generic title?
Yep.
Okay, I know that's really rude. So I think that people, when they get into your line of work, especially when they've maybe been out on their own for, you know, a year or two, they can get very self-righteous. They can get very kind of, oh, I'm just living the most perfect life. I've never had any problems. I don't fall off the wagon. I didn't accidentally have a cigarette last night. You know, I didn't get pissed 2 weeks ago. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
And it starts to kill me.
Yeah.
It really starts to kill me, and I start to feel very resentful because it seems a little smokescreeny to me, and I really don't like when something's not real.
Yep.
So you coming out with this post saying burnout, and there's so much in this, and I've only written down half of it, but I want to ask you about it. So burnout was my go-to place, this is where I thought it was really interesting. It gave me permission to rest.
Mm.
So do you mean, okay, I've burnt myself out? Are we talking partying? Are we talking...
If I wasn't, you know, super exhausted, super tired...
Oh, you wouldn't allow yourself rest.
Wouldn't allow myself rest.
So you would... Okay, all right, I want to stop right there because I think a lot of people will relate to that, and in a way, I do.
Mm.
Do you think in that, is there a sense of I need to prove so much to the world, so I've got to keep going and aiming high and ticking off things on my to-do list until I'm absolutely exhausted? Because I understand that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also too, rest, when I learned how to rest, I learned how to get in touch with myself and to hear myself, to feel connected to myself. All of those, I know they're spiritual words, but it's true. So by exhausting myself, being tired, completely running myself flat, when I did rest, I almost didn't have the energy to hear that voice, to listen to myself, all that kind of stuff. So
you're not just, it's not healthy rest.
Nah.
It's you're actually under, you're down.
So down resting. Like depressed down.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is when you're then lying around listening to negative thoughts rather than I'm peacefully resting.
Yes. It was, you know, you've landed here again. Why did you get here again? Mm-hmm. You know, you're being lazy. You can't even get up off the couch. You can't even get out of bed. You can't even exercise.
Yourself.
So I had, there was no win in burnout, but that was my go-to place.
But what about where you've said it was burnout was your go-to place to gain love? What do you mean by that?
I have always found it really hard to let people give to me, to receive love.
Okay.
And to
because you're busy trying to heal everybody?
Well, you know, there was a time in my childhood that really geared me up for being fiercely independent. And what's the contradictory is that, you know, I want to help people and they actually let me into their lives. But if someone comes in to help me, I'm like, no, I got it.
I don't need this. So, well, can I say, is it, and I know that you'll take this in the right way, and I only ask these questions because I've seen lots of variations of people like you in terms of the healer and the healer by nature.
Yep.
And there is part of me always through words that is a healer by nature with people. So I want to be able to look them in the eye, give them time, talk to them, and always trying to find a solution or a happier place for them. So you can run yourself ragged when that is the natural instinct for you.
Totally.
And then, but then when it comes back, is there a sense, or has there been, where I know for me in the past, if someone starts to sort of give me the same back, I guess I've probably acquired, sounds terrible, but slightly wiser people have done more work and exploring on themselves, I should say, because wisdom comes with exploration.
Yep.
You don't just, you know, pop out and, hey, I'm really wise. Oh, hi, I'm actually quite wise. No, it's always been there. But I would think, I guess, when someone would start to sort of counsel me, I guess, for want of a better word, I would immediately go into, oh, God, no, please, no, don't, because if it's not going to be the right words and if it doesn't resonate with me and if I think it's a waste of time, this is now going to kill me, this conversation.
Yep.
Does that make sense to
you? That makes a lot of sense. But I think it's I also use that as a defense mechanism. I use that as an excuse of, you know, they won't get me, they won't understand me, they won't understand what's going on all on in here because I know how to self inquire and do all those kinds of things.
Yep.
But really it was just a defense mechanism to allow love in, to allow help to and to be helped. So when I reached the stage of burnout, exhaustion, whatever you want to call it, it was the only time I allowed love to come in.
So what did you allow people to do for you in that state?
Just come over, like...
Or what did you want them to do, I guess? Because if you're saying that you create burnout to gain love, then there's something either consciously or subconsciously you're actually wanting for people that you are getting in the way of.
Yep.
I wanted your healthy state.
Support. Yep. I wanted a cuddle.
Yeah.
I wanted to just like lie on the couch and then pat my head because I would never let them do that.
Why?
Because it was just easier. I've always been known as a person that you go, you're in my space and I'll listen. I'm the listener. I'm not often the talker. It's just my natural, that's a natural go-to place for me too, the listener.
Yeah.
But how that can screw me up is that I don't then find my stuff as important, or I think I just don't think that that person can support me and hold me like I need it until I reach completely, I need someone to talk to.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, this would be good to talk out with someone. This would be a good thing to share with someone.
Yeah.
It comes in at a point of desperation.
You wait till you've gone in the
red. I wait till I'm desperate.
Does that, because that makes a lot of sense to me as well. In fact, I, you know, it actually reminds me of growing up. The only time I would really ever come clean to mum, like if I was upset and I had gone quiet and I would get to that point where it literally felt like someone was strangling me.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm literally not saying what is building up inside of me. And often it was a lot about my dad not being around and that would really, really upset me to different degrees, especially just off the back of coming home from Sydney after spending time with him. I would be traumatized you know, in the lead up to saying goodbye to him, and then certainly on the slide back, you know, into life with mum. No offense to mum, but so she would always say, "What's wrong? Come on, I know, you know, when you get, you know, I know what you like, you know, there's something wrong." And I would wait till we'd almost had a sort of either a screaming match or I'd got so choked that I'd burst into tears and then I'd finally come clean.
Yeah.
I guess it's about sort of intimacy, isn't it? It's like, I can't let you in.
Yes.
I just can't let you in. It's too painful.
Yes.
It's better that I hang on to it.
Yes, which comes back to what we're talking about before, connection. You know, it's that where like we want connection so badly and to share what's inside, but it's scary at the same time. So, you know, you wait until you're completely flatlined, until you actually seek that connection consciously.
Yeah. And it sort of comes back a little bit to what I know is a universal problem of years and years and years of building up dialogue with ourselves, of telling ourselves, this is what I'm like. I don't like people to come and inquire. You know, I like to work everything out myself. I don't think anyone's got the answers for me. You know, all of that, you
stories.
Know, the stories that you have kept programming, like it's like the kind of Chinese whispers that you've kept saying to yourself.
Yep.
And it's exhausting.
Yep.
And you mentioned in your post, this way of life nearly killed me twice. Yeah. I'd like to hear about those.
Well, very similar to you. My throat chokes up.
Which is in the whole, you know, Louise Hay, or your body ailments are connected to different parts of your
body.
And the throat is always when you're not speaking your truth.
Nope. No, and it's the same in terms of the chakras as well, which I work with quite a bit.
Yes.
It's your communication center. It's your authentic expression.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was 2 years ago, I was reaching burnout again. Mm-hmm. I was nursing, studying psychology. I was opened up my business.
So this was the transition out of nursing, still your foot in one camp and going into the other.
Yep. Burning every candle possible.
Yeah.
Smoking still.
Yeah. But telling yourself that I'm working really hard because isn't this wonderful? I'm creating this new world.
Yeah. I've got all the energy for it. Yeah. I'm fine.
Just
got
to keep wrapping up things over here while I build and plant things over here.
Absolutely. And at the same time, all of that busyness was covering up a lot of my emotions internally, which I wasn't aware of.
And that's the thing. It's always the
underlying thing. Unconscious.
And you're so friggin' flat out that you've got no idea that there's something ticking away. Like a time bomb.
Literally.
Literally.
So I thought I was walking home from uni and I thought that I was swallowing hard and it was hard to swallow. I thought, I've never had tonsillitis before. Think it's tonsillitis. No biggie. I'll go home and I'll rest. But I remember going to bed that night and I was living by myself at the time and I was crying out for my mum. And I was like, whoa, something feels weird.
Do you normally cry out for your mum? Like, is she your go-to parent?
She's my natural go-to parent. But this, I felt like a little child.
You wanted
your
mummy.
I was scared and I wanted my mum.
Yeah. Mummy, you.
Yeah.
Sorry, put the Y on it, please.
Mummy. Okay. Make it sound like a little child.
Shrink yourself down. This is the radio theatre here.
Well, it was. I was actually like a kid. Anyway, I woke up the next day, could barely swallow.
Ooh.
But I remember
sore?
Whoa. Indescribable, sorry. I went to bed that night, though, and I said to myself, you're going to end up in hospital. because of this. And I woke up and I messaged my mum and I said, I need you to make a doctor's appointment. Went to the doctors. They said, oh, this looks bad. It looks like tonsillitis, maybe a little bit worse. I'm going to send you home with penicillin. I'm like, how do you want me to swallow this penicillin?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't realise it was 1910. I always just think the penicillin.
Seriously,
just
seemed, yeah. You can see my throat can barely...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. What do you want me to do? Crush it up and snort
Yeah. Happy to do. Done that before.
This is how I got hit. No, that wasn't that period of time.
That wasn't that period of time.
No.
I'm clean.
Yeah.
So then I stayed at mum and dad's. Mum and dad forced me to stay there because I was ready to go back home. And they're like, nah, you're staying here. We're going to look after you. Mm. So, you know, the food, the shelter, the care, the love. Mm-hmm. Anyway, 2 days later, I couldn't swallow. I had to have a towel shoved in my mouth because I was drooling.
Jesus.
My whole face was swollen. My neck was red and I thought, this is actually bad.
That's really scary.
So I went back to the doctors. They said, you need to go to emergency. You've got Quincy.
What?
And I was like, that sounds cute.
Quincy Jones?
Quincy Pace or something?
What, Maggie Beers?
I thought, well, that's a cute little thing. It's not a cute little thing.
When things are unusual in terms of being names applied to things, it means a lot of trouble.
Not good.
Quincy is here.
Quincy is not good. So what it is, it's an abscess full of pus.
Oh, my God.
And it took over my throat.
Jesus.
And it was ready to burst, go into my lungs, and could have killed me.
Wow.
So I went into the hospital, emergency department, and they just said, we're going to have to sort this out ASAP. Mum was there and I was just held her hand and they did this procedure whilst I was awake.
You must have been terrified, like going, oh, my God, if I swallow one more time,
oh
Quincy
my gosh.
Might erupt.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, your poor mum too.
It was not good. It wasn't good. And I just remember, but you know what was interesting? When I was in that time where basically my throat was closed, all I could hear was the negative thoughts inside my head.
And what were they saying? Were they negative thoughts or, because it's really weird, and you know, you've got to be careful when you talk about how much dialogue goes on in your head because people think you're crazy, but then I guess it isn't 1910, thank God.
Yeah.
But I've had some wisdom come through that's been very, very, here's what you need to know, and it sounded sort of angry, but it's actually been wise. But this was your ego, you think?
Well, I think it was ego plus actually what you're saying too. What you're saying has a lot of merit. And it was both. It was this voice of anger from things that I hadn't healed in my past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it was that relationship or that friendship or something from when I was a little girl or whatever it was. And it was just
a
collective
of stuff.
But it was collected in my throat.
But
you know,
all about what you hadn't said.
All about what I hadn't said.
Wow.
So anyway, that was a time that nearly killed me. I was in hospital for 2-3 days just on IV antibiotics, completely burnt out.
Do you know what's really interesting about that? Because I always, and I'm thinking about this a lot this year because I have some stuff going on with someone very close to me and I'm very aware that this year is going to be highs and, you know, real highs and real lows. But I do know whenever something is dying or when something is beginning, it has the opposite kind of something else is going. So what I was thinking of when what you were doing at that time in your life 2 years ago is you were actually going, I'm stepping up to be a healer. Because I know that takes a lot of courage to think that you are worthy to be going around calling yourself a healer.
Yep.
It's like a creative person. It might be like an author. It takes a long time to feed that ego to shut up and stop telling you you're being a dickhead.
Yeah.
You get over yourself.
Yeah.
So you have actually physically in terms of the to-do list and a lot of that which burnt you out because you're still managing your old life.
Yeah.
But you have stood up and said, okay, I am going to be the healer now.
Mm.
So what you've actually also spiritually and subconsciously said is, okay, if there's any shit that needs to come up and out so I can be a great healer, it's time you came.
Yep.
And almost comically, although I know obviously this time wasn't comical, but just in Cat John style, it friggin' all went, game on, kick off, come up and out. Quincy, here we go.
Whole heart, I don't do things half.
No, neither do I.
No.
Neither do I.
Like, just get, if you're going to smack me down
Absolutely. Sever my head and then I'll stitch it on later and fine, we're good to go.
We're good. Yeah.
So that must have given you some major realisation.
Whoa. Mm. That was That was huge. It was huge. And it was
it's so odd too.
And it was a massive
and
thing.
And unique.
Yeah.
Like you.
Like me. Odd, unique.
Correct.
And it was a massive lesson in practice what you preach, woman. If you're going to step into this role.
That's right.
Of serving other people, empowering their lives and teaching them how to take care of themselves.
Yes.
Then, mate,
be
you
authentic.
Need to put a big mirror up in front of your face.
And I was going to say, and going back to almost like what, you know, me being very sort of passive aggressive about some of the wellness industry.
Yep.
Like practice what you preach.
Totally.
You know, I know your character would want to do that authentically. Yep.
Always.
So
when I'm not, I get shown really, I guess, at a harsh level when I'm not.
Yeah. And tell me about the second time it nearly killed you.
The second time was actually early last year where I hit rock bottom, more so mentally. That was I just went into depression.
Really? Even though everything was going so good, like you were finally, like I know all the bits that you've longed for in terms of your being a healer and the brand, even the brand, because there is brand around that, and your brand has always been so beautiful and never forget seeing you the first time at the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival. I've just remembered that. And there you were sitting in your beautiful little space and it was the first time that I went to the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival and I felt like it was claustrophobic.
Yeah.
There was a lot of the wrong people there as far as I'm concerned from my personal experience. It had changed as a brand enormously and it was chaos. But there you were in this white, incredibly designed space and your face, you just lit up as this such pure, happy, positive, beautiful energy. And you were giving these boxes out that had different things in them, love or, you know, happiness and a little feather and a little bit of mesh. They were just so beautifully designed. So getting totally off track there, I know how much of what was going on. What pulled the brakes on?
Last year, it was about my self-worth and about money.
Okay.
So what I was also releasing, like the previous year with the Quincy, it was moving out of traditional ways of helping people through nursing and psychology and then moving and stepping into the space of, I guess, holistic care. And then last year was about, okay, you've moved into the full space of holistic care. Just how worthy do you think you are of making this really happen? And
what did that question mean in terms of really happen? Because me sitting over here on the sidelines thinks that is going, has been admiring from afar going, Kat, John, it's really happening.
And in terms of serving other people and helping other people, it was. And probably financially it was at a level, but I had all these old ways, old programs, old beliefs around
money,
which really, at the core of it, was about self-worth.
So many people do. And so many people wonder why they're kicking goals in a certain area, but they're still not kicking money goals.
Yep.
And it always comes down to, well, what do you believe you deserve?
Yep.
So how did that play out for you?
So I guess I was at the start of last year, for the first 6 months, I was running courses, I was running programs, I was doing workshops.
Chakra courses. Absolutely need to do.
Yep. Wonderful. So they're moving into 4-day intensive retreats now, which
will be
fun.
I've got to do that. Yep.
So there were chakra courses, there were meditation workshops at yoga studios. Things were actually really good.
And beautiful stuff.
Beautiful, you know, and just, it was just, it was great.
Your brand, your beautiful Kat John brand.
Yeah, it was actually going really, really well. Mm-hmm. But I would always walk away wondering if I did enough, gave enough, or whether people liked it. So I would go there and I would question myself. Mm-hmm. Even though I was sitting there and I was serving and helping people and I could see the response on their face and even the response back, but I myself was unable to accept or appreciate what I was giving.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, law of attraction, whatever you want to call it, the universe, it always just gave me enough money to scrape by.
Which is always the way for people with an issue about money.
Absolutely. Yep. Which was complete. After a while, it became exhausting and I started to question what I was doing. I started to question if I made the right move out of nursing and go into this. And by constant questioning, I was burning out my mental space. I was burning out.
Your burnout addiction or your have I done enough addiction, which then flips it and it's now, hey, burnout's come, you know, that's still playing there. Like a gambling addiction, like any addiction, a sugar addiction, whatever it is, it's like just when you think everything's okay, that inner demon is going to say, hey, but what about this?
Yep. Absolutely. And so this time it was just, it was a self-worth burnout. I took myself to a place of like, I have just got nothing left. I don't even know if I can do this business anymore. I don't even know if I'm meant to serve other people. And I remember I closed down my website.
No.
I had a landing page just there and just to say that this is what I do. And I just, I stopped caring.
Wow.
And for 3 months I would go to bed every night and I would pray to not wake up. And I remember I would wake up and I'd be like, far out, I'm here again. Okay.
Wow.
And then the voice would start going, the negative voice would start going. And I'm like, oh my God. So day after day after day, 3 months, that was where that I wore myself out.
So do you think that you started questioning yourself because you're doing all of these things and things you've put a lot of time and care on, whether they be these beautiful chakra courses, whether they're your meditation workshops, and the money that's sitting in your bank account doesn't actually subconsciously feel even.
Yes.
So then you're going, there, oh, I thought I just put this out to the world and these people, but I've only got this acknowledging me that it's only okay. And I don't want to be okay. Yes. I want to be really, really special.
Yes.
But that bank balance isn't special. So therefore, you might be kidding yourself, Kat.
You are spot on.
Yeah.
I look to money to validate my worth and what I gave to people.
Yeah.
And that was dangerous for me.
Yeah.
That was very dangerous. So as opposed to going, how am I going to get myself out of this? I just kept looking at my bank balance, making that validate my self-worth, and then that would just cripple my self-worth.
So how did it physically manifest with you, this situation? Or was it more the dark mental thoughts?
It was very
getting
dark
very
mental
dark.
Thoughts. Yep. Pushed people away.
Because you're basically those, I would imagine those mental thoughts could have got pretty extreme because you're basically threatening yourself that actually you're putting yourself on notice that actually you don't have anything in this lifetime.
Yep.
Because if you're putting on notice everything you've just built, if that's taken away, that doesn't leave a lot.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I was wondering. Like, you know, your whole life being taken away.
Yep.
What now?
What now? There's no point then.
No.
If I gave up that to experience this and this is still not enough, then why do I even want to be here?
And what, and am I going to get driven back to this place every single, you know, every year or so?
Wow.
Like, no, I can't keep coming back here.
Yep. So it manifested in, I just really didn't want to leave my house and I felt significantly lonely. Wow, so lonely.
So how long did you sit in a space like that and how did you go about digging yourself out of that?
I sat in that space for 3 months.
Ooh, that's a long time.
Yep.
And three, growth, lessons in numerology term, an interesting amount of time.
Yes, three months.
You know, I say in dating, it's the old three-month rule. You
can, I know.
You can false advertise for 3 months only, but by the fourth month, your little story's going to have holes in it.
And you either break up or you stay together. It's the three-month rule.
It is. It's truth.
Yep.
So what did you do to get out?
The very first thing I did, one morning I woke up, I looked out of my bedroom door and I just felt the greatest pang of loneliness I've ever felt in my life.
I know that feeling. It's terrifying.
And I just said to myself, you are unsafe to live alone.
Yeah.
Right now, it is unsafe for me to live by myself.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing I did, and I've lived on my own for, I think it was 4 years. Mm. Again, that fierce independence thing.
Yep,
so really, what I decided to do in that moment was to bring in a housemate, not just any housemate. Mm-hmm. I spoke to my guides and said, this is what I want. This is who I want.
Mm-hmm.
And seriously, within 2 days, the most perfect person walked into my life to fill that space in the house. And that was like my first anchor of saving myself.
Mm-hmm. And what did they bring to the mix that you needed?
Just life, like life inside the house. A person to communicate, someone to say good morning, someone to say good night, someone to
All of the things that you've kind of said to yourself for a million years, I'm a little bit too busy for all of that.
Totally.
A little busy for that conversation and that intimacy and that chill out.
Yes. Yes. And someone to be in my space, mm-hmm. you know, all the time, seeing me when I wake up, seeing me when I go to bed, seeing, mm-hmm. feeling me when I'm not in a great mood. Mm-hmm. It was really, that was the first time where I thought, I have to let someone see me for who I am. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I don't know how I'm going to live another day.
Wow.
So that was the first,
yep,
first that was the step. First thing. Mm-hmm. That was and the
then,
first step.
And then what?
And then I went away to Bali. Mm. I already had an overseas trip booked. Firstly, it was to run a retreat. And then secondly, I went to America with my best friend and her sister. And it was a really hard trip. I didn't really enjoy America this time. Mm-hmm. I'd been there before and I was just in a negative space. But the noise and the craziness of New York, I don't know what it did. It helped me find solitude in myself.
Because everything's so chaotic around you that it's almost, yes. like, oh, there's a slower place and it's actually me.
And it's actually me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was over there, I thought, you know what? There's so much chaos going outside of here. I'm going to go and do a yoga practice. Mm. And I was like, wow.
What an odd thing to do in New York.
Yes. But it felt,
you know.
Whoa, it was just something as small and as little,
yeah.
as that,
yeah.
you know. And
that's, in a beautiful way, that's kind of like you getting your control back, because you're going in the biggest energy city-wise,
yep.
in the entire world, I can actually control,
yep.
this city's energy for me. By going, slowing it right down, yeah. and walking into a yoga studio and actually creating the space that you want to get clarity in.
Spot
that.
On.
Yeah, that's
spot
beautiful.
On. And then truly the final piece is meditation. That, yeah. is wow. Mm. That changed my life, mm. and it continues to change my life. And it is now, it's my therapy. It, mm. is my ultimate therapy.
How have you learnt it for yourself?
Self-guided.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've always, you know, when I opened up, I guess, to my spiritual self, mm. I would listen to guided meditations and those sorts of things. But, mm. through the chakra courses that I've run, I don't know, it's a very natural thing for me to do and to share, mm. meditation. Mm. I don't read it off a thing. I don't, I guess, pre-write every single word that I'm going to, mm. read, mm. I'm going to say. So in the chakra courses, I was able to share that with women and they were getting incredible results, mm. out of it. So I just started to self-guide.
You started to give the workshop to yourself?
I did.
Yeah.
I took my own practice.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I took my own practice.
And that's also breaking the cycle of the healer and the carer,
yeah.
where you've learnt so much. And it, once again, it's all about giving it to everybody else.
Yes.
And you've turned it back on yourself.
Yes.
Because people like you, the real constant caregivers,
yeah.
have got to be careful, because they can, I think internally, I mean, you know, there's arguments whether you believe them or not, there's probably no proof, but spiritually, you know, that a lot of people that overgive and don't allow it back, don't turn the care back on themselves enough, end up with breast cancer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because everything's going out from the heart. The energy is,
yes.
going barreling out of the heart, yeah. towards everybody else so much, and it doesn't come back.
Huh.
And, you know, you think about the sort of the abundance signal. It's got to come back. It's got to come back.
Yes.
And like the tides,
where,
in,
yes,
and out, and in and out, and
totally.
In and out. You can't treat yourself, you know, like a water pistol.
Yep.
You're going to run out of.
Yep.
water, you know, it's got to come back.
It's got to come back. And that's where I think for a long period of time what I had to let go of, mm. is the selfishness around putting myself first.
Mm.
It's never been natural for me to do that,
mm-hmm.
to put myself first.
So
I had to let
that.
Go of the selfishness around thinking that mm. no, you're a priority in your life.
Okay, so I presume 2017 is going to, we're all a work in progress. We're going,
yep.
to be a work in progress the day before our little eyes completely, you know, close on our deathbeds.
Mm.
So, you know, I always say a good healer should be healing themselves.
Yep.
There should be something going on.
Yep.
You know, I should be able to turn around and say, hey, so what are you healing this month?
Mm.
I really believe that. It's not something to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
If you are having problems with the one thing that you are also there to share.
Yep.
Because you've actually got to learn a million things.
Totally.
So you can help a million people with,
yep.
lots of different things. So I just want to ask you this. We've run out of time, unfortunately. You and I could sit here for six months rattling on. Kat, what do you wish the world would understand more about burnout?
I think that there are so many teachings and lessons in burnout, that it can be seen as a negative thing. But if you just actually stopped and started to investigate and self-inquire as to why am I here again, really why am I here again, then there are so many growth lessons out of burnout. And I think the last part is to know your signs of when you're leading into burnout. What are your warning signs? Because if you don't know them, you're just going to keep ending up there.
Like I did, as I said, like the Groundhog Day.
Yep.
You know what people should maybe invest in this year if the burnout topic is resonating?
Yep.
Is buy a burnout book. Yeah. And literally diarise, especially if you're someone on that 7-day cycle like I was, or whatever it is, or if it's a work, career, self-worth kind of burnout like yours, but diarise. Even if you feel like, I don't feel like burnout is relative to me today, there will be.
Totally.
It'll be the calm before the storm.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Oh, absolute pleasure.
It's so lovely to have you
Loved
here.
Loved it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of The Wise Guides, we'd love you to share it with your friends and subscribe to the show to receive more like this by heading to iTunes or novafm.com.au. This episode was written by me, Amber Petty, and produced in the Nova Entertainment Podcast Studios. Executive producer Andy Milne, audio engineering by Matt Argoon.